Welcome to Girls on Pop episode 21. I am your co-host, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow co-host.
And I am Ashley Lynch.
Welcome to the show. It's been a couple of weeks since we recorded, so there will be many things to talk about. But I think you mentioned when we were sort of spitballing ideas on what to talk about to start the show, you brought up the Matrix trailer. So let's talk about the Matrix.
Yes, let's
rewind to 1999.
Oh my God, I'm so excited about everything right now.
I know, right?
The Matrix was very much like a big part of my life. And that I still remember when that movie came out. It hit like an atom bomb. It completely changed the culture. And it was just a hugely important movie to me. I loved everything about it. And I'm one of those people that even defends the sequels and always has. And I know there's some people who, like, I have my criticisms of them too, but I know there's some people who are like, yeah, there's only one good Matrix movie. It's like, nope. No, there's a whole trilogy there. It's all one story if you watch it. So
I agree.
I am that person.
Yeah, no, I'm fully with you. I remember so clearly going to see this, and there were maybe like 15 people in the audience on opening weekend, and we all kind of were sitting, like, we didn't know anybody, but everybody was kind of sitting in the middle of the area. And literally the movie ended, the credits rolled, the lights came up, and everybody's like, can we just stay for like a second viewing?
Yeah.
It was that amazing. And actually, indirectly, The Matrix led to my current career because I first became aware of Spark when they had the visual effects team that won the Oscar for the making of the film. It was like 10 years later, they had the team come back to do a presentation on the making of the movie. And mm-hmm. That's how I first got introduced to Spark. And lo and behold, now I'm working at Spark. So the whole thing I have very, very, very close associations with the movie. But all of this to say, the new Matrix trailer, what'd you think?
Well, before we get into the trailer itself, I want to talk about the teaser.
So
the teaser they launched on the Tuesday before the, or no, I think it was the Monday before the trailer came out, and the trailer came out on Thursday. And what they did is they relaunched the old website, whatisthematrix.com, which is one of like the prototypical transmedia websites that was created back in the day of the late 90s. It was a great example for, here's how we're going to create a web experience that extends way beyond the movie. And they really put a lot into it. And it was, you know, kind of heralded as like a, this is how you approach this sort of thing. And it worked well with The Matrix. And so they use that same web domain to launch the new teaser. And what was fascinating is you go to the page and it asks you to pick the red pill or the blue pill. And depending on which one you picked would depend on what narration you would get for the trailer. One of them, I'm not sure who the narration is. I'm going to assume it was Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who's in the film. And the other one I know is Neil Patrick Harris, if you pick the blue pill. But if you watch the teaser multiple times, you would see a different teaser every time. It was cutting the teaser together for you on the fly. And so there was who knows how many different shots they were, and they're all like really tiny snippets of shots, completely without context. But it was put together in such a way that you could sit there all day and click on this thing and have Neil Patrick Harris say, you think it's 8:23 p.m. right now? While it's 8:23 p.m. And at 8:24, he says, you think it's 8:24 p.m. right now? It's like, it's an incredible piece of marketing that they created. I've never seen anything like it. I'm a little bit in awe of it. It's, I thought it was an incredible thing to do. And it wasn't long after that we got the full trailer proper.
Yeah, I think it's really impressive because one of the things that struck me of the trailer itself is, I mean, technology has increased by leaps and bounds in the last 20 years or whatever, however long it's been. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult for anything to be like blowing your mind the way the trailer or even the first movie did back in the day. But I mean, one of the things that struck me is there isn't that, it looks amazing, but there isn't the wow, the initial wow factor of bullet time. That's not to say there isn't some incredible technology that they're going to unleash on us, you know, in the making of. But clearly, like, for me, the first thing was like, okay, so this looks amazing. Great. What the hell is going on? Everybody's back. Mm-hmm. Let me try to remember how this universe fits together, however many years since the last movie. Because like you mentioned, like, the first Matrix film was kind of like the breaking groundwork for transmedia. And the thing is, the entire franchise is, right? There's a reason why we have a different Morpheus this time around. It all ties into the video games, the comic books, the anime. Basically, it's all interconnected in this universe. And I quite honestly don't remember what's happened in all of this other stuff, because the only thing that I ever revisit are the movies.
Yeah, it can be hard to keep up, because like, there was the Enter the Matrix video game, which came out in conjunction with the second film, and they actually shot like 40 minutes of additional material on Matrix Reloaded that was specifically just for the video game. Yeah. It's not just like a tie-in video game. It is like a side story in conjunction with that. Yeah. And that's a game that has largely been lost to the sands of time. It was like PlayStation 2, original Xbox. You know, I actually went back and replayed it recently just so I could like bone up, but getting it to work and run was a little bit of a challenge. And then there was, after the movies, there was an online called The Matrix Online, which lasted for a few years and was kind of maybe a little bit before its time. The technology for an online game wasn't really quite there to do what the game was doing, and so it had issues, but it did have a loyal fan base while it lasted. And they continued a whole storyline within that online MMO. The story would continue to evolve. And there was a whole storyline that ended with Morpheus basically trying to recover Neo's body from the machines. And in attempting to do so, he ends up being killed. So Morpheus dies inside of that game, which most people don't even know it exists. But that is considered canon in the Matrix universe, that game. So in it, like, it ends with Morpheus dying. That's a thing. So yeah, there's this whole other experience that I'm sure they'll account for that within the film. And it's almost impossible to tell exactly what this movie is about, because the trailer was throwing so many curveballs and was so vague in exactly the way that you want it to be, in the same way The Matrix was originally. It's like, I don't know what this is, but it looks cool. And I'm just curious. I'm blown away by the fact that I don't know where this is going. And that is so exciting. And there's a few little clues that are in the trailer, but even those, I can't tell you definitively what they mean. Like, there's legitimately a point where The Matrix 1 is playing on a screen in The Matrix Resurrections trailer. Neo is basically chased through a hole in the screen that is playing a scene from The Matrix in it. And so it's like, okay, so The Matrix exists inside the world. Like, The Matrix, the movie, exists inside wherever Neo is at this point in time. So it's, I think anyone who looked at this trailer and thinks that what we're going to be getting, that what Lana Wachowski came back after all these years to do was like a soft reboot of The Matrix, I think they are in for a big surprise and one hell of a ride.
I fully 150% agree. I don't think that she is the type of filmmaker that would just, you know, revisit lightly something that's from her past. She is out. And I mean, the Wachowskis have always been out to kind of like blow minds and take names. And this is exactly in that wheelhouse. It's both somewhat expected and completely unexpected. Like you say, the fact that I watched the trailer 3 times, I meant to watch it again before we recorded, and then I ran out of time. But the fact that it's not 100% clear what exactly is going on and what story the movie actually tells, it is super exciting. And I'm like, and I hope that this opens the door for like 3 more reboots, because I'm happy to watch more sequels. Give me all of the
Matrix. I kind of would be too, but I don't want to get my hopes up. I don't think we're going to get this. I think this is more kind of like a last ride for Lana, which I'm fine with too. I didn't know how much I was like trepidatiously interested in this movie when I heard about it. It's like, but Lana's doing it, so I have faith. And then I watched the trailer, it's like, there's no movie I'm more excited for this year. I'm just like, every day, is it Christmas yet? Can I go watch The Matrix? You know, this is the one for me this year. I have to pull out my old, cyber goth club wear out of the closet and try to squeeze into it to go see the premiere.
Oh man, I fucking love that. I am pretty certain I lost those the rubber pants that you need a talcum powder to put on. I lost those sometime in the early 2000s. I'm pretty sure I'm not replacing them.
I mean, just for clarification, no, I don't still have my cyber goth club wear, but I like the idea that I've been holding on to it all these years in hopes that The Matrix would return.
Dude, we would be so in style right now because the 90s are back with a freaking vengeance.
Yeah, back with vengeance.
So
everything that's in the trailer, the action, I like that it doesn't look like the other three Matrix movies look like.
Yeah.
It has a different visual style. It's like, okay, well, this is both familiar but different. That's good. I don't just want something to placate my nostalgia. I want something that's going to show me something new. And this looks like it's clearly going to be showing us something new. So I'm very excited about that. I'm very intrigued by the fact that apparently Neo and Trinity don't even remember each other. That's interestingly tragic. And I also love that we're going to get to see, like, how old is she now? She's got to be like close to like 50. Carrie Ann Moss kicking ass.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. Let's see more middle-aged women kicking ass in movies.
I'm in for it. I agree. And I think you're right on the visual style in particular, because one of the things that I liked about the trailer so much and that I think is probably going to carry through the movie is this, and you've mentioned it, this knowing that this is something that we're already familiar with, but at the same time, it's not the Matrix that we knew before. This is clearly like a new vision. And I mean, everybody is older. Everybody's a little bit different. This is maybe a new reiteration of the Matrix of the program. Who knows? But I like the fact that it's kind of playing with, for those that are familiar with the Matrix, it's playing into canon. And for those that aren't familiar with it, I think it comes across, at least the trailer comes across as a fairly good, like, introductory point into the world. For those that, for whatever reason, may not have seen the original at this point, you have no excuse.
And there's a lot of stuff we haven't seen yet either. Like, Jada Pink is returning as Niobe in this, so she's going to be there. The Merovingian's going to be back in this. There's one bit of casting that I know and shouldn't know. That I only know by accident, that I am not going to spoil for anyone, but just know that, like, someone's going to, from what I understand, someone's going to show up and everyone's going to lose their shit.
Because there has to be that moment.
Including me. And the fact that they've been able to keep anything secret about this movie is amazing in this day and age. I think it was easier back in the days of the original films, but now it's just like, it's impossible.
Yeah, fully agree. Yeah, I was impressed that, once this, because they played, I think it was the full trailer, wasn't it, at the oh God, I've forgotten the name of the con.
At CinemaCon.
Yeah, at CinemaCon. And the fact that very little came out of that once it played, I was very, very impressed with.
I think it's going to be one of those situations, and you see this every once in a while. I think you saw this with Endgame too, where people were being strangely respectful of like wanting, like, no, you need to experience it yourself for the first time. You don't need to have anyone tell you about it. And I think we might see the same thing with Matrix Resurrections, where people are going to be respectfully vague in talking about it to give people a chance to see it.
I hope
At least so. I hope that's the case.
I hope so too. Very exciting times. Exciting times.
Yes, this is my jam. This is the stuff I live for, so I am very excited.
Well, let's keep the 90s alive, shall we? With our first movie discussion. I unfortunately have not had the chance to see Candyman yet. It's very high on my list, but I just didn't get to it before we recorded. So tell me, wait, first, I'm assuming you're a fan of the original Candyman.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. I'm a fan of the original Candyman. I haven't seen any of the sequels to it. There was a Candyman 2 and a Candyman 3, and I've been told that they're not good. They were, I think, both direct-to-video sequels, so I just never bothered with them. But I've always loved the original Candyman. It's such an interesting, offbeat kind of parable fairy tale of a dark movie. And it's just like the combination of Virginia Madsen, who I've come to believe does not get enough credit for her role in like genre film in the 80s and 90s, because that woman was freaking amazing, continues to be amazing. And of course, the enigmatic, incredible Tony Todd.
Yeah.
And probably what is going to remain to be his career defining performance.
I agree.
Is, even though I think he's given much better performances and larger performances in other movies, but he is always going to be remembered.
Remembered as, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure.
And it's a great movie. I loved it. And Nia DaCosta's sequel, and we can call this a sequel because it is an in-canon sequel to the original film. It makes quite a few direct references to the first film. So if you watch the first film to be fresh and then go into Nia DaCosta's Candyman, then you're going to be in a good position, because otherwise there might be stuff that like slips on by. But it is not a soft reboot. It is not a retelling. It is not just like, oh, another story in the world of... No, this is a direct canon sequel to the original film. And this film, I am just mostly astonished that this is Nia DaCosta's first film. Because it is so assured. It is so deftly and smartly handled. It is so capable at delivering both drama and horror and suspense, and it is a genuine true blue horror movie. If you love horror movies, you're going to love this movie. Even if you don't love horror movies, it's not so heavy on the horror that's probably going to turn you off, and it still contains all of those elements that you want from this movie. As it is right now, this movie is easily my top five of the year. It may end up being my favorite movie of the year, but I was just blown away by it. I absolutely adored this film from beginning to end. It's great. I want to say I don't want to spoil too much, but I'm not sure there's that much to really spoil. It just does some really interesting things, not just in telling another Candyman movie, but incorporating that into both a lot of current day social issues to do specifically with race, with gentrification, with class. And also, and in interesting ways that you're not expecting, you know, it's not just doing like racism bad. It's like, thanks for telling me, movie. It has a lot of really interesting things to say, but also about the importance of myth and scary stories in our society and the benefit that we derive from those and the need that we have to kind of tell our narratives through that sort of medium. I think it actually kind of pairs interestingly well with Wes Craven's New Nightmare in that sense. Would make a great double feature with that film, because that as well is a movie that's very much about the power of myth and storytelling in horror and what that means to us culturally. So it's a very interesting film, and it's a very well done film. It is everything that you want from it. So it's, I cannot sing its praises highly enough.
That's awesome. I think it was last year she participated. She did like almost like a Meet the Filmmaker kind of Q&A thing at Fright Fest, which is, I think, the only thing I watched from that streaming. I think it was called Fright Fest. Can't remember now. But yeah, it was really, really fascinating. And she came across as somebody that is very assured for someone that's so young and really hasn't done a lot of work. But man, she just talks like she knows exactly what she's talking about. She knew exactly what she wanted the movie to be and what she wanted it to look like. And I'm so happy to hear that it lives up to expectation. I'm really keen on checking this out. And thankfully, Halloween's around the corner. I'm gonna bring on all the horror movies.
Yeah, and it just came out on digital too. So I haven't yet, but I'm looking forward to watching it again now that it's available on digital.
Yeah.
And Nia DaCosta has already been tapped to direct the Marvels. So the one with Captain Marvel and Ms. Marvel, and I guess the other Captain Marvel.
All the marbles. That's awesome. That's awesome. Let's keep the ball rolling with some horror movies and talk about Malignant, the movie that blew up Twitter.
Malignant. You know, you say it blew up Twitter, but to be honest, I'm just going to throw this up front. I think 20 years from now, we're still going to be talking about Malignant. I think whether or not you like this movie, and I think there are legitimate reasons to say I didn't like this movie, even though I personally like this movie. But for you to say, yeah, I didn't dig it. I think there's a legitimate criticism for you to say, I'll defend your right to not like this movie, because I think there are things to, you're either going to love it or you're going to bounce off it hard. No one's going to be in the middle on this movie.
I kind of feel like I'm in the middle on this movie.
Really?
I do. Because I think it's, in some respects, it's so... it's so bad. And in other respects, it's so fucking awesome. I don't really know how I feel about it, to be totally honest. I think the second half is so good, but
I think you nailed it at the end there, because it took me, even after 3 days, I was like, I still don't know how I feel about this movie. Like, I know I enjoyed it, but I don't know if this is a good movie. I don't know if I could call this a good... I still don't know if I would call this a good movie. But I'm still talking about it, and I still enjoyed it. So maybe that's the definition of a good movie? Yep. I don't know.
I could go with that.
Very, very, very scant details. So the movie is about a... Oh, God. How to even describe it without even giving away too much? It's about a woman who is basically experiencing hauntings and will suddenly transport psychically to people who are being murdered by this cloaked deformed figure that is stabbing them, and gets embroiled in a chase with this monster that turns incredibly personal. And I'm not sure I want to spoil anything more than that.
I think that's
God, what a horrible way to sell the movie.
Well, this is the way I think you sell the movie. If you watch the trailer, which I think is a fairly good indication of the amount of crazy ass action that's in
the movie. Yeah, and I think the movie does, or the trailer does a good job of not spoiling the important stuff of the movie.
Yeah, so I think if you watch the movie and you're even vaguely interested, I say give it a shot, because that's kind of what sold me. That, and full admission, when I saw literally everybody in my feed was like, I'm going to go watch Malignant again, I was like, what the fuck, I need to watch this, which is basically why I queued it up before almost anything else that was on my watch list. And the thing that impresses me the most about it is it mixes all of these things that I like that I didn't know could be mixed together into one movie. Like, it has it has the crazy action. It has some amazing body horror, reminiscent of old school, 90s, the best Cronenberg. It has these really silly, 80s, 90s, supernatural thriller aspects to it. It has some very stilted acting, some not so great visuals, but it all kind of works together in this package that manages to work.
One of the things I found both off-putting and exciting about it and entertained by is the fact that it starts out as what you would expect basically a James Wan haunting movie to be like. Okay, I was like, I know what this is. This is Insidious. This is Conjuring. He's doing his thing. I recognize this. And then it's whether or not you pick up on this, I certainly did. It'll depend on how many of these films you've actually seen. But it becomes clear that, oh, wait, this is a giallo film. And it really kind of comes through in the really operatic score that will just completely rip into the movie. It's like, whoa, that's a giant tonal swing. And a lot of the really kind of larger than life operatic elements that are woven into the horror and the violence is like, okay, this is giallo. So it's just going to be completely crazy. And, you know, just really out there, and you're just gonna have to go with it. And then by the end of the movie, it's like, wait, did this just turn into a fucking superhero movie? I think it did. It's like the movie changes genre no less than 2 times and still manages to, I think, work. It didn't lose me at any point. The only thing I would say is if you're watching this movie and you get half hour into this movie, 45 minutes into this movie, and you're like, I'm not really enjoying this. I'm going to know out of this. Stick with it, because you will reach a point where you are going to go, holy fuck. And that's one of the things that I think I love about this movie, is that it makes some capital C choices. It is a huge ass swing that doesn't have a lot of regard over whether or not you're going to stick with it or not. It is clearly, this is James Wan's blank check movie. This is what he does when he has absolutely no restrictions put on him. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I kind of like the craziness of it. And it is also why this movie is going to be immortal. We're going to be talking about this 20 years from now, because it makes those capital C choices. And it is impossible to forget this movie once you finish with it.
Yeah, you're totally right. And I just want to say, I never picked up on the giallo references, but you were so right. It's not even references. The fact that it's full on a giallo movie for like the first, you know, half, I totally didn't pick up on that. And you're so right now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. And I read some interviews with Juan afterwards, and he has basically said specifically, like, this is his giallo movie. He wanted to make a giallo movie. So it was definitely his intent from the very beginning.
Yeah. It comes across for sure. Oh man. So, yeah.
I do recommend people seeing it. I don't guarantee you're going to love it, but you may end up loving it, but you will not forget this movie.
Agreed. 110%. Dan didn't like it at all, but every once in a while he's like, that stupid movie. He watched it last week and he's like, just randomly, I'll be like, the ending of that movie, man, I still don't get it. I'm like, you don't have to get it. The fact that you still remember it.
And like, for me, I was like on a Zoom call with a bunch of friends, and one of them was like watching Malignant at the same time that we were on the Zoom call. So I hadn't seen it yet. And so I'm watching him basically watch Malignant while we're chatting. And it reaches a certain point in the movie where he's just like, holy shit. And I'm like, okay, I'm sold. Whatever this is, I got to watch this movie.
Oh man, I love it.
And it was just entertaining. It's entertaining to watch other people watch this movie.
Oh man. So yeah, that's Malignant, folks. Just see it.
Absolutely.
I watched this one because I saw it was on your list and it had been kind of on my watch list. So I'm like, okay, I'll move it up a little bit. Kate.
Yes. It is the female assassin week. Yeah, we seem to have gotten like a bunch of these movies this year. We had like Gunpowder Milkshake earlier this year. And then like, I think Jolt kind of fits in there as well. And I think Kate very neatly fits in there. It's a new film from Cedric Nicholas Troyan, who he did the last Huntsman movie and hasn't really done anything since. But I think he's a good visual director. And it's a very simple, I don't want to say cookie cutter plot, but it's a very simple plot. Basically, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I will watch anything that she is in, because I absolutely love this woman. I've been waiting for her to just like blow up enormous. And she's basically it's La Femme Nikita. She's this girl who's been trained to be an assassin from a very young age and doesn't really have anyone in her life other than her handlers, and ends up in a situation where for an old hit that she does, the Yakuza basically poisons her with plutonium. And she's going to die within 24 hours. So she starts murdering her way through the Japanese underworld to get to the boss that has poisoned her. And there's twists and turns along the way. And she ends up dragging along with her this young girl played by Miku Patricia. And it's a lot of fun. It's like La Femme Nikita meets DOA. It's got really cool action. Mary Elizabeth Winstead kicks a lot of ass. I think this is maybe like the Die Hard sequel that we wanted and didn't get. Because she played Lucy McLean in the fourth Die Hard movie. So I've always wanted to see a spinoff of like, let's hand it off to Lucy and see her do it. And maybe this is that movie.
You're totally right. It certainly does feel like it could be that. I didn't love it quite as much as I liked Jolt, but visually I think this is a better movie. Like it feels like a more cohesive vision, and it looks really, really good. And the fight sequences are like tops.
Yes.
There is some amazing fight choreography here. And I love that there aren't like 5,000 cuts, which is the current trend that I really like. Give me the slower version of the fight sequences. I want to see all of the movements and even the mistakes, because at one point Dan's like, did you see that she fell on an actual mat? I'm like, yes, I didn't notice the actual mat. That's a slight oversight, but still overall, I really enjoyed it. I think you're right. Elizabeth Winstead is amazing. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is amazing in it. I didn't love it quite as much as I liked Jolt.
I agree. And I think that's mostly because Jolt is a fun movie. It's definitely a much more kind of like lighter hearted movie once you to enjoy it. This movie is, I wouldn't call it grimdark, but it's definitely wants to keep the stakes high because she's like slowly dying. There's no way this is not going to end with her dead at the end of it. It's like, it's just foregone conclusion. You're going to die. Now will you accomplish what you need to accomplish before you die?
That's very true.
So it has a very kind of like grim, desperate prospect from the very beginning. And that's what kind of propels the film, and in a good way too. But yes, I think just on an enjoyment level, I probably like Jolt a little bit more. But I was actually shocked at how much I like this movie. I, you know, whenever I go into one of these types of films, I'm like, I want to love this film, but I'm always prepared that I'm going to be let down and go, you know, like that's kind of what my reaction to Gunpowder Milkshake was, where it's like, I just didn't think the way the action was shot and edited came together in that movie. And in this movie, it very much does. So this one was a lot of fun, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, agreed. I still would recommend it, for sure. It was hugely enjoyable.
And it's on Netflix right now. It's very easy to just, like, pop it and watch it.
That's right. That's right. Tell me about The Protégé. I don't think I know what this is.
So, in keeping with the theme with female assassins, The Protégé is a movie directed by Martin Campbell, who did Casino Royale. And it is Maggie Q is, again, young assassin who is raised by Samuel Jackson, essentially. And God, it's been a couple of weeks since I've seen it, so I'm trying to remember all the plot details. But essentially, shit goes wrong. Samuel Jackson gets killed. And there's basically the guy who's responsible for all of this is essentially Michael Keaton, who she also starts getting into like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith type relationship with. So it becomes this like, are we going to kill each other right now, or are we going to fuck type of thing? And okay, sometimes it's kill each other and sometimes it's fuck.
Yeah,
and
I'm in.
Sometimes it's both.
You had me at Maggie Q and Michael Keaton.
I know. And what's wild is you have Maggie Q and Michael Keaton in martial arts fight scenes with each other. And I was shocked to see that Michael Keaton is like actually pulling it off. It's like, I'm actually buying that you got some moves at like the age difference is maybe a little weird. But I was actually shocked with, much like Kate, I was shocked by the level of quality in the action of this film. The action is really fun, and the entire movie just like moves like a freight train. A lot of fun, really enjoyed it, and it was giving me exactly what I wanted from it.
That's
it
awesome.
Was another one of those movies where I sat down and gone, I want to like this, but this is going to suck, isn't it? And I got through the movie, and I was like, that was so much fun.
Oh, that's so good. Is that one streaming?
So I recommend that one.
Is that one streaming or is it on VOD?
It is on VOD right now.
Okay, good to know.
I don't think it's streaming anywhere. I could be wrong, though. I watched it on VOD.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Matt Damon in Stillwater.
Yeah, so you saw this movie too, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
All right. And I think you even talked about it a couple episodes ago.
I think I might have mentioned it. Yes.
So like quick recap, what did you think of this movie?
I really enjoyed it. Actually, I thought it was quite good. I thought Matt Damon was really good. I had some issues with some of the story plot some of the plot points, but generally speaking, I thought it was really well made and not the movie that I had expected. Like, it starts off, you kind of think it might be like a Wanted ripoff, and that's not what it is at all.
So I don't think I had the exact same response as you.
Yeah, no, I've read some really interesting discussions on the movie, and I think that some of the takeaways that people have made have been really interesting. So I'm curious to hear what about it didn't work for you.
Yeah, so the story is basically this, like, redneck oil rig working father travels to France because his daughter is in prison.
Yeah.
For a crime that she probably didn't commit. It's basically the Amanda Knox story is what it is. And then there he basically gets kind of embroiled in desperately trying to get his daughter out of prison, by essentially trying to find the real killer.
But I mean, I think the thing that works for me, you've nailed it. I think one of the things that works for me really well about the movie that is probably the reason I liked it as much as I did is that he is not the hero that we would expect. Like, he is unexpected at every turn. Everything he does is both completely in keeping with the character that he's playing, but also the wrong thing. Like, every turn he's making mistakes. Yeah. Every turn he's fucking things up.
Okay, which I appreciate. Here was where I kind of went awry with the film. So it's basically set up, and everything that I described tells you it's like, okay, this is a thriller. Or if it's not a thriller, this is a mystery. This is a movie that you would see maybe Liam Neeson in if he was going to beat up and murder a bunch of guys. Or if it was going to be a much more kind of low-key film, you would see, I don't know, Jai Courtney or something. I don't know who. But you'd have the mystery version of it. And that would work too. This movie is neither a thriller nor a mystery.
No.
It is a drama of, more than anything, a fish out of water story. Because you have redneck Matt Damon, who is in France, who doesn't speak the language, doesn't really get along with the people, doesn't get along with the local customs, and sticks out like a sore thumb because it's like, oh, I work on oil rigs. I don't know coffee from, blah, blah, blah. I'm doing a really horrible imitation, but nonetheless, you get the idea. And he ends up getting into a little bit of he gets into a relationship with a French woman who basically helps him out and is his tour guide and takes sympathy for him and his plight, and he befriends her 10-year-old daughter, and they form a kind of pseudo family unit while he's there in France on his little mission. And as a drama, it's interesting, but that's not the story. The story is still very much about his mission to get his daughter out of prison, and it is intent on following that. But again, it is not a mystery, and it is not a thriller. There's nothing thrilling and there's nothing mysterious about this very clearly thriller story that wants to live in the body of a drama. And it's it ends up feeling like the movie doesn't know what it wants to be. It doesn't want to commit to the drama. It wants you to pretend that it's actually a thriller, but it never wants to commit to being a thriller. And so as a result, it ends up being nothing. And that was my biggest problem with the film. I kind of like the drama elements, but if they had decided to make that movie, I probably would have liked it. But instead they didn't. And it just felt like, I don't want to say missed opportunity, but it didn't know what it wanted to be.
No, I think you've actually hit on something that I had trouble with the film as well. And that is that exact point. The fact that it doesn't clearly commit to one thing or the other. It tries to be both things, but it's not really either of them. I do think it lives more as a drama, and I think it works better as a drama. But I think missed opportunity really is the right term, because there is an opportunity here. But then that would also be a different movie. So you're right. It does have a personality complex. I think that would be the best way to explain it. You are totally right. But then I thought, you know, coming from McCarthy, who is not a director that's really known for making anything other than like hard-hitting dramas, it's also not completely shocking. He did have a couple of writing partners from, he did like the whole podcast tour when the movie came out. And I can't remember exactly who he was talking to. It could have been Marc Maron. It could have been someone else. And he had talked about wanting to have like, he had been working on the story for a while and it wasn't going anywhere. And he felt he needed to have an outside voice or outside voices to help shape the narrative. And so he had brought on a couple of screenwriters from France that helped sort of suss out the story. And I think that actually may have caused more problems than helped, because I have a feeling that that's what kind of detoured the storyline. But I mean, overall, I think the movie still works mostly on Matt Damon's performance, which is really, really good.
Yeah, I think all the performances are good. And I would be very kind of curious about the development cycle of this film, because I can't help but wonder, did it set out to be a thriller in the beginning and this is just what it turned into? I don't think it turned into anything that's recognizable or that fully works. I think the elements that do work in this film work and work well. I just don't think it's the story that they're telling. So that's ultimately why the film didn't work for me. Yeah. But there is good stuff in it. I wouldn't say it's not worth watching. It's maybe not worth running out and finding right away. But if you come across it on Netflix, you could do worse. But yeah, those were the problems I had with it. And it all came down to it not knowing what genre it was.
Yeah, totally valid. Totally valid. I liked it more than you did. We're allowed.
No, now we must fight.
No! Gloves
off. Those are the rules.
Yeah, that's right. The Monster, another one. This is one that I'm also not familiar with.
Yeah, this is a little bit of an older movie. This is from, I want to say it's like 2015 or something like that. This is from director Brian Bertino, who did The Strangers. And I've been going back and looking at a few of his older movies because I really kind of dug The Strangers. I had a bit of a complicated relationship with it. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, well, that's derivative and uninteresting. And then the second time I watched it, I don't know what happened, but it just like, it terrified the ever-loving shit out of me. And I thought it did a really good job at that kind of like, creeping dread and terror, especially of like being a woman alone in a house and feeling like uneasy and unsure.
I think The Strangers kills. That movie holds up so well, and it just overall, it's a fantastic piece of filmmaking and really scary as shit.
Yeah, and then I saw that. I haven't watched it, but I saw The Dark and the Wicked came on Shudder, which he directed. And I was like,
I really enjoyed that.
Oh, that is on my list. But I was like, okay, well, what else has he been doing? And I saw there's a few other movies he's done that I haven't seen. It's like, okay, well, I really want to go back and check it out. And so I tracked down The Monster and I watched this, and it is a very cool little horror movie. It is a very simple story about Zoe Kazan as a very kind of like, I guess bad mother is the way to put it, but she's just like, she's not fit to be a mother. She's got alcoholism problems. She's got abuse problems. She's not even a grown up herself at this point. It's very much a situation where her daughter is looking after her more than she's looking after her daughter. And she's basically, as we catch up with them in the story, driving her daughter, who she has a very contentious relationship with. It's like, I think about like 12 or 13, to her ex-husband's, and she's going to basically stay permanently with the ex-husband because obviously she is not fit to be a mother. And that's where we catch up with them. And then they get into a horrible accident in the middle of nowhere that completely like wrecks their car. And while they're waiting for a tow truck to show up, and finally that shows up, and there's some big creature that is out there in the woods that starts attacking them. And that's it. They're basically out in the middle of nowhere with no help. And when help does arrive, this big creature is basically just attacks anything that comes around. And it becomes about this mother trying to finally be a mother to her child in this dangerous and fraught situation and trying to like get out alive. And it ends up becoming an incredibly sweet little drama in the middle of a razor sharp little horror movie, which it's a nice quick, I think it's only like about 90 minutes. It's not very long. It's very, very simple and, you know, quick horror story that it everything about it just sort of like comes together and works. And it has nice little thrills and some good horror moments and has a tender drama that's in there as well with good characters and good performances. So it's, you know, it's definitely a good recommend from me for this film.
Oh, that's awesome. I also missed this one, so I'll have to add this to my ever expanding watch list. But I do like Bertino, so I'm happy to hear that it's a good one too. I had to look it up while you were talking. Have I seen this? I don't think so.
We're moving into October now, and these people are going to want to be filling up their Halloween playlist with some stuff that they haven't seen before. The Monster is a good one to go back and check out.
That's awesome. I have a couple of movies too before we move into some TV, and I'll go through them kind of quickly because they're all fairly interesting. But yeah, okay. So Kid 90s, which is Slay Moon Frye's documentary. So Slay Moon Frye of Punky Brewster fame.
Yes.
So I didn't realize this, but she basically was always filming when she was basically as young as, you know, 14. She always had a camera with her. I think it became more of a thing for her once she became a teenager. While she was Punky Brewster, she was, you know, very young. That wasn't the case, but there is a lot of stock footage of her being, you know, Punky Brewster. And so it's basically a documentary that looks back at this contentious point in her life where she was a teenager that had kind of grown out of the Punky Brewster years and she wasn't really sure where she fit in the world. So she decided that she, you know, had surgery, she moved to New York, she kind of was trying to find herself and who she was going to be. And it kind of captures this period of the 90s through a variety of her footage and like stuff from her archive and also interviews of her today where she talks about that period of her life. And it's not like the best documentary, but it is kind of interesting for somebody that kind of grew up at around the same time. And it captures this period of 90s Hollywood youth culture where, you know, basically all of the superstars that are superstars today were all growing up and coming into Hollywood at the same time. And it's just kind of an interesting snapshot of that period. And that's really the only thing I have to say about it. It was kind of amazing seeing footage of Leonardo DiCaprio at like 15 being, you know, a teenage boy. So I don't know. It's not like the highest recommend, but for anybody that thinks it sounds even vaguely interesting, I actually did think it was kind of fun, though I don't think it really has a point, to be honest. It's just Slay Moon Frye sharing her home movies.
Well, I haven't watched it yet. What I've heard from people is there's the other documentary, Val, just like Val Kilmer's documentary, which he was involved with, and it's used primarily using footage that he shot himself because he was doing the exact same thing where apparently he was just filming the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that we are moving into this era where we're going to have essentially celebrities who were just shooting everything and archiving everything through their entire lives. We didn't have that before because it wasn't really technologically available, but we finally reached the point where it is.
Yeah.
And now we can have people like Slay Moon Frye and Val Kilmer who have like all of this footage that they have acquired over the years and just held on to that documentaries can be formed out of, for better or worse.
Yeah. And I mean, having seen both, I think the Val Kilmer documentary, Val, is much, much better. They're both on Amazon. So if anybody wants to see them, they're both streaming on Amazon Prime. The Val documentary, I think, is far superior. Mm. But this is just like a really interesting little snapshot. It's a curio for sure. One that I rather enjoy. Bitchin', the Sound and Fury of Rick James. This is the Showtime biography on Rick James that's, I think, either co-produced, certainly made with the involvement of his family. So his daughter is actually interviewed for much of the documentary, but it doesn't gloss over any of the bad shit that Rick James was ever associated with. If you're even vaguely interested in Rick James, it is totally worth watching. It's so, so fascinating to just see the trajectory of his career and how it changed over the years. And all of the stuff that he got himself involved with is just kind of like, you just shake your head. Anything that could have gone wrong in Rick James' life went wrong. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly, it's a lot of talking heads, a lot of our Carville footage, but it's definitely super entertaining and really insightful. And I'm glad that the family didn't kind of like wash over all the bad shit that happened in his life. So I would say it's definitely worth checking out. The Dry. So I'm a huge Eric Bana fan. I love him. I don't think he's in enough movies, especially over the last couple of years. He seems to have like fallen off the face of Hollywood, which I don't understand. So whenever I see Eric Bana in a movie, I'm like, yeah, must watch that. So his latest is The Dry. It's an Australian film. It's quite small. It's based on a book by an author named Jane Harper. So he plays a like big city police officer, maybe investigator, I don't know. And he goes home after the unfortunate death of a friend of his. And when he goes back, the death was suspicious. And when he goes back, the family starts asking him to maybe like look into it since he is this big time, you know, big city police officer. And as the story unfolds, you learn a little bit about his past as well, which plays into the overall story. It's kind of predictable and very familiar. It's not really giving us anything particularly new, but it's really well made. Robert Connolly is a really good director, and the movie is solid. And Eric Bana is really good. So it has this kind of foreign kind of feeling to it because it is Australian and the setting is a little bit different. And the whole thing unfolds in this town that's kind of off the beaten path, where basically like they're in the middle of a drought. It hasn't rained in like 3 years. So there's also this like social commentary that's at play. So it's a solid drama. I'd recommend it. I thought it was quite good. Four Good Days, Rodrigo Garcia reteams with Glenn Close. They did Albert Nobbs together. I think that's what it was called. So this one stars Glenn Close and Mila Kunis. And it really is like the Mila Kunis as an addict story, trying to get herself clean. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's very drama with a capital D, you know, an actress like making herself look terrible in order to, you know, play a drug addict. It has its faults. It's also not terrible. Like, it's well directed. And the performances are actually pretty good. It's just not, like, super memorable. Mm-hmm. Like, it might get some, I don't even know if it gets any awards buzz. I think that that's what they were going for. But it just is what it is. I don't know. It's not a huge recommend. If it happens to be on TV and you flip through and you have nothing else to watch, it's not bad. It's just not like worth going out to look for. The movie that I would recommend that I say that everybody should watch, even though I know most people won't because it's not their cup of tea, is Robin Wright's Land. So this is her feature film debut, which she also stars in. She plays a woman who's like had a tragedy. So she literally drops everything and moves to a cabin in the woods. And it's basically her surviving for it's not clear. It's an indescribed amount of time, maybe a couple of years. I have no clue. And so the first half of the movie is basically her in a cabin with like no dialogue. Half the time she doesn't talk. And it turns into this really lovely story of this woman who kind of like comes back to life. It's super predictable, but the movie is really well directed. It's gorgeous. It also stars Damien Bichir, who starts to play a sort of important role in the story about halfway through. And it turns into this like really lovely story of like self-discovery. And I mean, I don't know, it's kind of cheesy, but it's really well directed. And she's so good in it. And it really gave me all the touchy feelies that I kind of cried at the end. So hey, it worked for me. So I say find Land. I think it's quite good. And particularly the first half is like really, really good. I love movies of where they kind of like Wild and, oh, I can't remember what the other one was. It's like stories of people trying to find themselves in the wilderness are really appealing to me for some reason.
Like in a different way, it reminds me of that movie All Is Lost with Robert Redford, where like for the entirety of that movie, it is a movie without dialogue. It is one guy trying to like survive on a boat in the ocean.
Yeah, and that movie is so good. This isn't quite to that level, but the first half of it certainly kind of falls into that category. And it is really, really well put together. I think it's a really fantastic debut feature. And she's such a great actress. It just all around, I think as a package, it's a really solid film. And I'm disappointed more people aren't talking about it. I think it played a couple of festivals and then it went to VOD. So it kind of, you know, it happened. But I think it's a really fantastic film. Highly recommend it. Yeah. And let's talk about some TV. Let's talk about Marvel's What If.
Yes.
I'm not sure how I feel about this show.
Yeah, I think I know how I feel about it. I mean, for me, when I was younger, I read a lot of the What If comics that Marvel did. This was a long-running series that they did. And I always enjoyed it because it was like, it's done at the end of an issue. It was like, here's these alt histories. It's like, what if this happened? And I didn't really need to. The comic was going to give me all the backstory I needed to get into the story. And by the end of the issue, it was going to be done. And I knew it wasn't going to be one of these, like, this is something that's going to go on forever, and I'm going to have to buy these six other comics to basically get the whole storyline. And, you know, it was kind of nice to just have, like, these little one-off stories that I knew weren't affecting any, like, larger canon in the entire Marvel comic universe. And the show is the same way. It's just doing it from the perspective of the movies, where it's saying, like, okay, here's the timeline of the movies. Now it's like, what if, you know, this, and like the latest episode that I just watched, which I thought was incredibly entertaining, was what if Thor was an only child? And it's basically like the idea, what if Loki wasn't this thorn in Thor's life that forced him to actually become a better person? And like, what would Thor become? And it's a really fun kind of story. Some of them are better than others. Some of them are more fun than others. Some of them are just outright downers. Most of them, it mostly seems to be, I made this joke last night that it's like, what if the Avengers ordered tacos instead of shawarma 22 minutes later, and that's how the universe ended? You know, and it's like some of the episodes do feel a little bit that way. It's like, what if this minor thing happened a different way? And it's like, that's how everything unraveled and went bad. And it does dwell on that a little bit too much. But some of them take really interesting swings that are pretty wild and fun. And it's nice to have something in the Marvel universe that doesn't have a lot of consequence to it. They aren't going to like spin these off into other movies or franchises or anything like that.
Are we sure?
No, we aren't sure, because I mean, technically Miles Morales came out of like alt fiction, you know, Spider-Verse stuff, and was so popular that they started integrating the character into the series proper. So if something is popular enough, they will find a way to integrate it. But for the most part, these are completely consequence-free.
Yeah, and I think,
you know,
I
mean, sort of episodes.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, I have this issue with pretty much all anthologies. I find that generally speaking, there's varying degrees with which each episode works. And I think that's, you've nailed it. I think that's my issue here. Overall, I like the visual style of the show. I like the concept of the show. But of all the episodes that have aired, I think I like two of the episodes a lot. And the rest, I could, like, I didn't have to see them. Like, it just, the mileage on them varies, for me, quite wildly, but then my mileage with Marvel varies quite wildly. So, I mean, I think that the two best episodes have been the Thor episode. Actually, yeah, the Thor episode and the Doctor Strange episode I really, really liked. And the rest have all been kind of like, could have done without that.
I really dug the first one they did, which was what if Peggy took the super serum and became Captain America instead. I really dug that because I thought that was fun. I mean, the other fun thing is that for the most part, with the exception of some of the like really big players like Robert Downey Jr., most of the cast of this are the voices that like Paul Rudd's here, Evangeline Lilly is here, Chris Hemsworth is here, Mark Ruffalo is here. It's, you know, they got like almost all the actors to play these parts, you know, with the exception of like, I think it was just Robert Downey Jr. and Scarlett Johansson are like the two that aren't.
Yeah, part of it. Yeah.
And that's just because it would cost way too much money to get them to come back and do it, especially ScarJo right now because she's embroiled in a lawsuit with Marvel. So,
yeah.
But the other thing is that these were all the instances of Black Panther, aka T'Challa, were recorded before Chadwick Boseman's death. So this is the last Chadwick Boseman that you're getting. And there's a couple episodes where you get to hear Chadwick Boseman do the voice. And it's really kind of bittersweet, but it is nice to like hear him again.
Yeah, I think the show is interesting. I do like that they're taking a chance and they're trying some new stuff. And this definitely feels, at least in that respect, kind of fresh. But yeah, mileage varies. But overall... Yeah.
And it's definitely lower risk because it's all animated. So it's, you know, they can get away with a lot and, you know, under a lower budget sort of circumstance. But
for sure.
You know, it's if you skip What If, you're probably not gonna be missing too much. If you've watched all the Marvel movies and you are a fan of the continuity of the Marvel films, then you're probably going to get a little something extra
for sure.
Out of these what ifs sort of things. It can be fun.
For sure. I thought I'd finish with, I don't know if you've seen the first two episodes of Foundation.
No, I have not.
Okay, so I had a complete fangirl meltdown. It's the only way I could explain it. I was flipping through and somebody's like, Apple dropped the first two episodes early. And I'm like, forget Ted Lasso. Because they also dropped that a day early. I'm like, fuck Ted Lasso. We're watching Foundation. And I, from the opening, like 5 minutes, my teenage girl self was squeeing. Because, yeah, this was totally what I was into when I was in high school. And I vaguely remember reading Foundation, but Asimov was never my favorite. So I'm pretty sure I did like one of the light readings on this one. So I honestly don't remember what the series is about, but I didn't care when I saw the trailers for this. I was all in from the get-go. It's hard sci-fi. It's Lee Pace. It's Goyer, who is, you know, varying degrees. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not. But man, this show, if nothing else, it looks spectacular. And it's really good. The first two episodes are very, very good. They cover a lot of ground. There is no hand-holding. You jump right into it. And if you are into this type of like science fiction, and I don't think you'd call it revisionist history because it takes place way in the future, but it's just a fascinating bit of science fiction. I'm so knee deep into it. I love it. And of course, Dan fell asleep. So he's like, now I'm going to have to watch the first episode. I'm like, that's okay. I'll rewatch them with you. Little, I have not yet told him that they probably need a rewatch to be fully like, to fully get it. Because the first episode, like for the first half, I was like, what is going on? Wait, what? And then it kind of all comes together at the end. But I'm shocked because episode one and episode two feel like almost two different shows because the material is just, the leaps they take is like astronomical. But that show is so good. And Lee Pace for everything. Just put him in everything. I'm in all the way.
Lee Pace is always good.
Yes, he's always good, but oh, he is so good here. He is such a good bad guy. Okay, that's my fangirling over Foundation. Just the space elevator alone was just like, I was literally like, oh my God, this is so cool. Yeah, I had a moment. I had a real moment.
That's awesome.
I still feel like I'm like 16 reading this for the first time, except I'm watching it for the first time. If you had told me when I was in high school that I would get to see a Foundation series, I would like not believe you. I wouldn't believe you. The only thing that's left now, there's like a small group of books left from my teenage years that have never been adapted, that I never thought would be adapted, that maybe one day somebody will make, like A Canticle for Leibowitz, which would be fucking like mind-blowing, but I don't think it'll ever happen. But a girl can hope. I never thought Foundation would happen, and here we are.
See, the problem is there's just too many shows to watch right now.
Oh, true.
You have to pick and choose what you're going to be able to like put on your plate, because I just caught up on Ted Lasso, and I've been looking at that series. I've been hearing good things, but I haven't watched any yet of For All Mankind.
Oh, so good.
Which I really dig like the premise of it. Let's do like alt history of the space race, but going up through and into the future to like the so that it stops becoming alt history and starts becoming science fiction.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a cool idea.
And that show does not.
How do you get from the 1960s to Battlestar Galactica? And I think that's a really neat idea. And I've never seen that before.
No. And that show is way underrated as far as I'm concerned. Way underrated. It's so good. It's so well written, so well acted. The special effects are spectacular. It really doesn't get enough love.
Yeah. So that's going to be the next thing that I'm diving into.
Oh, that's so awesome. I'm excited to talk about that because I really like that show a lot. We're big fans. Awesome. But you're right. There is a lot of TV. And honestly, I've kind of dropped when I shouldn't have watched the two episodes of Foundation. I watched them like literally on Thursday night. I was up until like midnight. I'm like, I must watch. Mm. And yeah, there's some other shows that I was kind of in the middle of that have now like, I don't know when I'm going to watch the rest of C. I don't know. I'm like two episodes behind, maybe three. At this point, I might just binge the end of it. Who knows? It is what it is.
I find how I'm watching shows is different too. And I don't want to say that like the Netflix like binge watching streaming model has changed me, but I find that there's some shows I enjoy doing the week to week thing. And there's some shows that I want to bank and just watch a bunch all at once. And like, that's what I found specifically with Ted Lasso, because like I like a lot of people, I fell into Ted Lasso late. The entire first season was out by the time that I came to it. And I ended up watching the whole thing in like a couple of days just because I couldn't tear myself away from it and really enjoyed it. And then season two came out and I'm like excited. And I watched the first episode. I'm like, that felt like an unfulfilling snack. I mean, it was good, but I want more. And I gotta wait for more. It's like, no. So now what I've done is I've basically just been like banking Ted Lasso and just wait for like, okay, it's kind of a rainy Sunday. I'm gonna lay on the couch and watch a bunch of Ted Lasso. And that's what I did this morning. I just laid down and watched like four episodes of Ted Lasso. And there was not the most recent episode, but the one before that. It was one of the wildest episodes that just kind of breaks from their normal paradigm.
Oh, Coach
what
Beard?
If Ted Lasso, but after hours?
Yeah, so the Coach Beard episode?
Yeah, the Coach Beard episode. And it was just like...
It's bad shit.
It felt like it was so left field, but it was like, it was so interesting and neat.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like to see shows like sort of like deviate from their own sort of like formula and like take swings into different areas. I always think that's fun when they do that.
Agreed.
And that episode was really neat. So but now I'm sad again because I'm out of Ted Lasso.
Oh, it's okay. You'll have more in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. There's only two more episodes to go this season. So. Yeah.
No. Oh, we're always disappointed when Ted Lasso is at an end.
But given the response to Ted Lasso, I don't see any way we're not getting even more Ted Lasso.
Agreed. Oh, you know what else I've started? I started watching the new season of The Morning Show, the Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston show, which I wasn't sure how they were going to do a season two, because season one kind of ends and you're like, okay, well, that's an ending. And then they're like, oh, we're going to do season two. It's like, okay, so what's going to be season two? And it's been an interesting start to season two for sure. So that's been interesting.
Many mixed things about that show that I just never tried to get into it.
I think
is it worth going into?
I mean, I think it is, because I think it tackles a sort of hot topic issue in a way that's interesting and different. And I'm not quite sure how, like, I do have mixed feelings about it, but overall, I think it did a really good job of it. And season two, the beginning of season two, like, the reason I didn't really mention is because it's not clear where it's going. Like, there's only two episodes in and they haven't really dealt with a lot. So I can't really say one way or the other whether it's going to be interesting or not, but they're setting up some interesting things. I really like Reese Witherspoon. I think she's really fantastic. And there are some amazing performances on the show that are worth watching. Jennifer Aniston is certainly not the star. She might be the biggest name, if you could say that. I think Reese Witherspoon maybe has more cachet at this point, but she is by far not the most interesting part of the series. By any stretch of the imagination.
Well, Steve Carell's on it too, right?
Yeah, he yes, but I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Enough said.
Yeah, he doesn't play a huge role, but it's kind of pivotal.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But we'll come back to that, I'm sure, once you've had a chance.
Maybe I'll check it out when I have this mythological free time.
Yeah, the free time that may or may never materialize. But that was another great conversation. Lots of good recommendations there. And, you know, as Ashley mentioned, you know, it's coming up to Halloween. So we've had some horror movies to talk about. So some recommendations there. You can come on by.
I'm sure we will have plenty more horror movies for you before Halloween gets here.
For sure. So come on by atcpod.ca. We'll put links to all the stuff we talked about in the show notes. Ashley, where can folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Ashley Lynch.
And you can find me on the Twitter as well at the Twitter. Look at me being all in the know. You can find me on Twitter at the Marina. Occasionally, sometimes.
Mostly, on the interwebs.
Yes. Mostly I just lurk. Occasionally I say something, but generally I just lurk and look to see what people are, you know, up in arms about. But yeah, you can always reach me there. And yeah, until next time.
See you then.
Opening and closing credits are Happy Alley by composer Kevin MacLeod. For more information, visit incompetech.com.